perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any way that you can see a sweeping wind. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we've said it before, but winning is better than losing, and winning against Carlton, much better than losing.
Yeah, so I think what this game firmly established was we are better than the mediocre Victorian clubs.
Mm.
Our considerable body of...
Pleasantly so, yes.
But yeah, going to the core of your point, which is beating Carlton... I must say, I was sort of, you know, this modern Carlton team, you know, a lot of our favourite heel characters like Jared Waite had moved on.
Mm.
My dislike of them was fading slightly. They've had a few lucky wins.
Yeah.
But then I watched them play and their game plan, which reminds me of... Dimmer at his worst.
Oh, me too. I had that's in my notes.
Well, interesting. But let's continue this point. Like, it was sort of because it reminds you of you know, quality in your team that you dislike yourself. I really hated the way they played. Like, I can't remember the last time I watched another team and thought, I really dislike the way they're trying to win this game.
Oh, Fremantle gives me that reaction sometimes. And Paul Roos Melbourne did as well. When you feel like coaches are coaching not to lose rather than to win.
Especially in that game when, like, the cherry on the top, which infuriated me a few times last year when we did this, was when they were still, even when they were down clearly in the last quarter, that they still wouldn't release the handbrake. That they were still sort of, you know, two men behind the play. And it wasn't just, like, lots of teams stacked the back line, but it was the way when they're on the break that they'd stop and prop and not play on, even when, you know, that was the time to break and play on, that they'd stop and try to hold on to possession in that infuriating style that, you know, last year we were one of the teams that least played on. And this year, I think Carlton are the team that least plays on. And it's just,
I know, and particularly
the
when we're,
it doesn't make sense.
Particularly when we're playing well, we're now close to the top of the league. And it's just so much. And it's just, I mean, it's a part of its personnel. You can't play, you know, stodgy when your second tallest forward is 182 centimetres tall.
We weren't playing stodgy when Griffo was playing. Like, we've been playing this all year.
True.
And it just highlighted to me the insanity of watching Carlton play is you can't put all those men back and then not break hard. The two things don't work, because if all those people are back and then you're slowly plodding up to get people forward, well, the other team's going to beat you back and you're constantly going into an outnumbered forward line. It was a really, really boring defensive game, and thank God we beat them.
I know. Our goal kicking is frustrating. I mean, it's hardly the first time that's been said this year. And part of that is structural, but we're not, you know, we're not generating a lot of big contested marks at the top of the square. Yeah, but, oh, God, I still feel like we could just be doing better. Like, I don't think anything really needs to change. They just need to kick the ball between the big sticks rather than the small sticks a bit more often, and I'd feel much better.
True. I mean, there's a couple of points. I completely agree, by the way. A couple of points on mate. One, you know, we're not the only team with this issue. We mentioned the Bulldogs last week, but the current the team that everyone's talking about is St Kilda's goal kicking right now. So it seems to be, you know, sort of issue du jour in the AFL. And also, and as you make the point at the top of the goals, this week more so than the previous weeks, when I watched the game on tape, you know, we should have kicked more, but not all of our shots are high quality. Like Trent Cochin from 50 and Kane Lambert from 50 late in the game, like, you know, they're not always going to hit those shots. And there were in the second quarter when we missed a lot. Yeah, we should have potted a few of them, but it's not the end of the world when we miss, because we've got a good forward pressure. good forward press. And, you know, sort of a lot of those missed shots were 40-60 against. Now, you should hit the odd 40-60 against shot. You know, 40% is still a legitimate probability. But I think the, with the benefit of hindsight watching the game on replay, when it's slightly less infuriating, probably wasn't quite as bad as it felt like.
Not quite as bad. What? We had 24 marks inside 50. The best team in the AFL averages around 15. So, yeah, and a lot of those were sort of 40 to 50 metres out. But, yeah, you really... I just feel like we should be doing better than we are.
You're right. But, you know, as we can... We can only, it keeps happening, so let's just hope that it swings by the
end. It swings around, yeah. Although, you know, amidst the goal kicking carnage, somehow Brandon Ellis can't miss, which is a pleasant development.
Well, do you want to talk about Brando? Because
I was fascinated. I think AFL Player Ratings tweeted out that you know, no surprise, Dusty's in the top one of the top players in the league, both for the year
second. And
over the last month. But if you over the last month, Brando's in the top 20 as well, and I didn't see that coming.
No, so I had a look at Brando, and actually, you know, it feels like he's been playing really well and career best. It felt like that, but actually, he's having his career highest contested possession year, but it's only seven, so it's not, you know, an amazing amount. It's only marginally up from what he normally gets. He's having his lowest disposal count in the last 4 years. But the thing is, on the AFL rankings, not the champion data ones, the AFL rankings, which really favour attacking play, you know, not waxing across half back. Last year he had a terrible year. This year he's really recovered, but he's actually, his best years 2-3 years ago were as good as this. So I'm just as long-winded of saying he's playing much better than he was last year when you look at the advanced metrics and to anyone who watches games and can see what he's playing. But we've probably forgotten that he was actually pretty good.
Yeah, that's probably the case. And I do, the one thing that feels he's doing better than he has is the winning the one-on-one contests. That's a definite area of improvement and pleasing to see.
Yeah, I like Brando. Look, we've got to talk. Let's get this out of the way early. I wanted to talk about Hooley. We're recording this just after the AFL appeal has happened, and you've got the 4 weeks. But
I've also lodged an appeal against Jaden Short's rush behind as well.
I've lodged an appeal against identity politics being discussed in the context of my football team. I love that Twitter debate. Hooley as a player, you there, Nick?
Yeah, sorry, I fell asleep.
Fair enough. Hooley as a player, why was Jed Land holding him? Because Jed Land, by the way, is a very deeply mediocre player.
Deep, if you, profound if you look, spud. Look,
yeah. I had to look him up. You know, because Bachelor Hooley was identified by Carlton as one of the most crucial players, and Jed was desperately hanging on because they know he's dynamite for us right now. He is in superb form.
I know.
And look, I just think
it's a big loss.
Like this towards the end of 15 as well. I thought he was absolutely crucial in our structure, and I just think he's been in absolutely superb form. Like on the weekend, he went 28 to disposals and 92%.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Because he does kick the ball a long way.
He does. And he's a beautiful kick, and he runs so hard, always gets there for release. And Choco, in his very interesting article in the Hun this week about him, and, you know, pointed out that he's not the hard inside player. Well, you know, of course not. Those halfback distributors neither are, really are. You know, Heath Shaw couldn't play in the centre square either. But we'll miss him. But also, I just think I am such a Bachelor Hooley fan as a player.
Oh, definitely. Well, I was fascinated, actually. Stick with me for this one. But so Patrick Naish, father-son prospect, was playing for Vic Metro on the weekend, and description of him, he had 24 disposals, 5 inside 50s, kicked 2 goals. You know, they're talking about his strengths and weaknesses, and his weaknesses were, you know, strengths, good run, long kick, you know, creates a lot of play. Weaknesses, you know, doesn't win a lot of inside ball, occasionally doesn't go as hard as he could at the contest. And I was like, my God, it's Bashahuli 2.0. And he is certainly on track to be a top 30 draft pick and quite possibly a first round pick. So, you know, that Bashahuli 2.0, you know, could be rated so highly. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, Basher's 28, so actually the timing would be perfect. Yeah, Basher will be just wrapping up in about 2 years, and he will have served his VFL apprenticeship by then. Mm. So who else stood out to you?
Well, we mentioned about Brando winning one-on-one contests, and the game did have one of my favourite moments in an already highlight-ridden season for Dusty, but there's nothing I enjoy more than when he outmarks 6 foot 5, 100 kilo key position defenders as he did with Liam Jones. he's great. I really hope we re-sign him.
Yeah, I think I've said on the podcast before, I've heard people say if Dustin Martin leaves the football club, there'll be more than one person following him out the door, but the other people won't be leaving voluntarily. I noticed, you know, during the game, did you actually think he had that good a game? Is it like he got universal best coaches votes and we're just so used to him playing brilliantly? I didn't actually particularly remark his game. I just my baseline for him was so high.
As you say, in the moment, it felt normal rather than, oh my God, Dusty's dominated. Like it was just, it was good. Right. But our standards have got so high for him that we expect him to dominate in a way that we've never seen before, when, you know, he's dominating in a way we have seen before, and it's fantastic.
Hmm. So I want to talk about Dion Prestia a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, he had a really bad first half.
Yeah, and the tape's not kind to him on his clearance work.
Mm.
A few times he was standing next to people, Carlton players, who then got the clearance. A few times he was unlucky, but it wasn't great. And his 17 disposals wasn't obviously nothing to write home about.
12 of those are in the second half. That's not so good.
The one thing I'll say about him in fairness is that Trent Cotchin, according to Champion Data ratings right now, I think is the 7th best player in the AFL.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
And not obviously didn't have a great game on the weekend, also only had 17 disposals. But, you know, maybe if you're sort of the complex argument that Prestia is doing some of the body work, that it has having a flow on effect on Cotchin's game, that's a correlation. There's no causation that I can see watching the tape, but, you know, that's a theory.
It's an interesting one.
Someone who did play really well, Nick. Who do you think I'm going to say on the generals? Speaking of short midfielders,
short midfielders.
Anyway, Kane Lambert.
Kane Lambert. Sorry, I was thinking certainly not Shane Edwards.
Kane Lambert did a lot of the job on Murphy.
That's true.
At least part of the game, Murphy was below his sort of better games and picked up 26 going the other way.
Yeah, six tackles, 5 inside 50s, kicked a goal. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Lots of score involvements, apparently. And I think he had 12.
That is good.
So that's a very high number for any mid, particularly for Kane. So, you know, he not only is having, I mean, it's not that big a statement saying he's having his best year of his career, he's having a genuinely good year as your fourth mid.
Six weeks ago, I didn't think he was quite up to being a regular in a good team. Yeah, he's made a believer. Speaking of belief, do you think Connor Menadue is settling into the seniors?
Interesting. It was his season high, 17. He's actually played a better game, according to advanced ratings, earlier in his career. But
it was a pretty good game.
It was a really good game. I love players who provide run, bursting run like he does. And there was a moment when I think it was, one of the brothers. He was in an open field situation, and the Carlton player could have run him down. And he looked once, saw who it was, and then didn't look again. Just burnt off and had some crazy speed.
That's pretty good fun.
Yeah, I mean, he's murdering the open field, and you know, I know there's some talk of potentially moving him forward a bit, but I really like him playing across the wing because he's so good in space. But yeah, there's something special there, isn't there?
If you just do
it a bit more often, there's talent, that
explosive speed and being able to dispose the ball at speed as well. Yeah, it's a pretty good one. Speaking of sort of burst performers, Jason Castagna is playing as a small forward at the moment, and that's a notoriously fluky position. But gee, he accumulates shots on goal in bursts more than anyone on the team, other than Jack, I think.
Had four, two of which he converted, and one of which was actually a pretty good shot that he missed, and would have had a third goal because I think he got a free kick directly in front,
turned into the Kane Lambert goal. Yeah.
Exactly. So, again, after sort of, I think it's fair to say of the current Richmond list, he's the most, senior team, he's the most maligned on the internet. It's not as easy to define that, to say that definitively anymore, but, you know, certainly had a much better game.
There are corners of the internet who still think that Sean Grigg can't play, so...
Yeah, the outside players always get the hardest time because there's a few people who think about Bacha as well. It's always the outside players who are most prone to pockets of anger on the internet. But I think with George Castagna or Jason, I'm pleased to see, by the way, from the Ivy speech that Castagna's nickname inside the club is George as well.
Yeah. I love everything about Ivy. Let's talk about him a bit more later.
We're going to come back to him. So while we're on small forwards, Nick, I'm not at all surprised that Shai Bolton got rested.
I noted that if Shai Bolton to the max is how he played in the first half last week, then I thought this week he really lacked a bit of zing in... hitting repeat contests. Hey, he's still got that goal kicking gene, you know, that ability to snatch the ball and fling it on the boot. I'm long winded way of saying I'm happy he's having a rest this week.
Yeah, I thought eminently sensible. He's had six possessions in the last six quarters, and they didn't really play him very much. They played him 58% of the time. So, he was almost been rested in game. So, and I noticed he's not injured. They described him as dropping as being quite managed, and I think it's a really, really sensible thing to do.
Well, of the tallest of the smallish forwards, I really like Sammy Lloyd's game this week. It was one off a career high in disposals for him.
Yep, but season high. You should really like it because it was a season high, and no obvious howlers, which he had last week, was a key setup guy.
I've had him as being close to being out of the team on a couple of weeks, but he really played well.
He did indeed, and I'm glad you had a positive because I was going to go to a next one of a negative. As already pointed out, Edwards. Low disposal count and a couple of notably missed hand passes.
Yeah, just wasn't involved as much as he could be.
Not having a good season.
No,
this is his lowest disposal average since 2012, And the AFL ratings have always loved Titch. They think he, you know, the advanced ratings, and he's dropping a lot in them. He's still actually quite highly rated on the Richmond team. Like, he's, I think he's still 6th or 7th best player. But he used to be, you know, very highly rated.
I wonder how he's, how he's, like, injuries set him back a bit. Someone who I thought your boy Dan Butler, defensively was, had his game ramped up. I thought he struggled to get a little bit to win enough ball as well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he's, for whatever reason, he has dropped off. Like, he wasn't as bad as he was last week, but yeah, he has, the performance graph is a lot lower than it was.
Look, if he tackles like a madman and still kicks a goal or two, he keeps his spot. But yeah, he can do better. Anyone else stand out for you?
Oh, it was just as a favourite moment. You know, the as discussed before, the you know right now Asprey and Rance think that they walk on water. They have so much confidence in
their games. Dylan Grimes got a bit of love in the media as well this week, and I think justly so.
Yeah, it was nice that and you know he took a beautiful ceiling mark. After Cripps had been sort of giving us a bit of trouble in the air, because he's a big, big lad, Cripps. That's why Cripps plays in the midfield and Dylan Grimes plays
third back.
When they are one-on-one, Dylan won that contest, and good for him. But there was a moment where Casbolt was in a contest with Rance and Asprey, and just for some reason tried to split the two when he had the ball running with it. You just knew it was going to finish badly, and it ended in a Casbolt sandwich with Rance and
he's not a small unit, Casbolt.
No, but you just knew it was going to be a disaster, and it was. They're fun to watch, those two. They've got a lot of chemistry.
Yeah, definitely so. Look, that was it for me.
Yeah. Nank's proving that I was going to say the difference between a good fantasy football player and a bit of worry with Nank, but you pointed out before, not a great matchup.
No, and I think look, he's had two of the past 5 weeks off, so he should be relatively fresh. But I have heard he's got a bit of a niggle, and yeah, he's not at his usual self. Although he does have a knack for the timely goal.
Oh, I just wanted to remark so a little bit about Caddy's game. Couple of things about Caddy. Firstly, I think this is actually public, but Caddy said one of the reasons he left Geelong was he wanted to play in the midfield more. I'm not sure that he meant in the ruck. But amazingly, he did actually get 2 hit-outs. So I didn't notice them, but good for him. It was interesting, you know, after he did that howler of a kick?
Yeah.
So he was obviously very keen to make
anytime
that up.
Anytime a footballer reminds me of my golf game, that's not good.
Yeah, good one. But if you look for the next 5 minutes, he was crashing in and hitting the contest like no one's business. And it did occur to me, if he had that attack on the ball all the time, he probably would be playing in the midfield all the time. Would not be on his third club. But, I don't mean that as a super big criticism, because I think he's actually playing decently for us.
It's the curse of the perfectly decent footballer.
Yes. And the one who, maybe could be just... You can see the flashes of how it could be great midfielder.
Could be a bit better, but for whatever reason, isn't.
No, he's not going to. I don't think at this stage in his career he is what he is. All right.
Okay, well, sort of mentioned before the Patrick Naish, but the AFL under-18 championships are on at the moment, so I'd encourage people to keep an eye on those. But the VFL team had a very nice win this week. 81 points.
They did.
And, some big performances from the usual suspects like Miles and Townsend, but as loyal listeners would be aware, that you know we tend to take a keener interest in, particularly if there's any sort of promising teenagers running around, and there was a couple of them, probably both of which got picked in the 25-man squad this week. But Tyson Stengel, from the Steve Morris dark times to now the overflowing abundance of small forwards, and he's got himself a game in the seniors.
Yeah, fantastic. Makes complete sense, and keeps the game plan how it was. Yeah, great for him. He didn't actually have his best game in the VFL on the weekend, but you know, it's a reward for overall effort.
Is it? Yeah, he's been a consistent performer. Yeah, and look, we need more 5'7" players in the team.
Well, you know, it doesn't make that much difference, I suppose. One thing I was interested in was the selection was Oleg coming in for, you know, I thought you lose Basher, you know, the obvious, you know, you had a couple of other guys you could bring in, particularly Taylor Hunt, who was, you know, his usual solid self in the VFL. And they didn't go with the solid sort of, perhaps defensively superior player. They went for the guy who provides run and dash with Oleg, who's maybe not played so well this week, but gives you future upside. Well,
he didn't play this week. It's one of the, you know.
He, against Port, he might not play as well as Hunt would have, but he's got an upside and development, and I was very excited by that.
No, it was good. Look, he's played a few good weeks. He didn't play last week because of the annoying VFL fixturing where you've got to hold somebody out. But yeah, you didn't. This defaulting to youth and pace, it's pretty fun. We're the third youngest team in the AFL this weekend, and noticeably younger than Port Adelaide. So yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, our core is in its prime.
Yeah, our best players are older, but there's 11 players with less than 50 games, which
it's nice. Long way right, and we should just say because a few people have mentioned it to me. Obviously no one wants to get injured, but Steve Morris coming back. The VFL team's going to play finals, and Steve Morris is probably a crucial part of that. So let's hope he gets back in time for September action.
Yeah, it's a good point. Look, a really interesting thing from the VFL game was they've started Ryan Garthwaite up forward. He's played his under-18 TAC Cup as a key defender, but before that was a forward in country footy. He played a quarter or so in the VFL before, but this week he played the whole game up forward, and 14 disposals, 8 marks. But frustratingly enough, he looks like he belongs in the seniors already with his goal kicking, because he only kicked 3 behinds.
Yeah, that sort of made my eyes twitch slightly. It's definitely worth experimenting with.
He's tall. He's a pretty good mark, and he's got a big tank. So the kicking motion is pretty awkward for a forward. But it's worth seeing if there's a little bit of the poor man's Tom Lynch and the Adelaide version see what you've got. And the selectors clearly thought so by having him in the emergencies.
Yeah, absolutely, and he gives us flexibility, and you've already got Jade Batchelor, who's technically a backup for Grimes, which is, you know, Garthwaite's obvious comparison in the back line. So you've got, we need better depth in the forward, makes complete sense. Jack Graham.
Yeah, so played his second game, about 70% game time, 15 disposals, and not a bad little highlights package on the club website. Like he's not fast, but he does run hard and he tackles hard. And, you know, those are two things that are designed to endear him to Richmond supporters.
Oh yeah, he's an internet favourite already.
Yeah, yeah. Eyes on him. Like he's really got a build up and you know, another month or so of VFL, I think, before he's even an outside chance of senior footy. But yeah, the arrow is pointing in the right direction.
Absolutely. All right, Nick, we've got this far. I think it's time to talk about the big issue.
Is he retiring?
Yeah.
I know.
So I've just before this podcast, I watched Ivy's retirement speech and actually I had to pull myself together afterwards. Like, it was genuinely emotional.
I know. Like that speech he gave before Ivan Soldo's first game.
Do you remember when there was a story of a little kid who got bullied at the football and
Ivy
went and met him in person? And he's just... I loved Ivy.
I know.
Like, I think as an adult, you know, you never love players as much as you did when you were a kid, but as a genuine adult, I think he's in my top five.
We've loved him pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, he's up there with sort of. So Richo's not in this category because
he's in his own category.
But I would. He's in my top five.
Most beloved Richmond players.
Yeah. But we were having an interesting discussion, which we haven't finished. We haven't really talked about, but we were just texting to each other about where does he rank? When was the last time we had a ruckman better than him?
Yeah, and it was a really good question actually, and I suggest two of the names that immediately came to mind were Benny. For me, yes. The late career Benny, and looking at the stats, actually, they were pretty similar players. Like Benny was a better mark, and his dropping into the hole in defensive 50, as late career Benny was very good at that. Greg Deer, I looked up the stats and realised that I was probably overrating him because of the warm nostalgic glow that I have about the 1995 season.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I did dismiss Deer. So they were the three, and I've got, you might have heard the rustling knickers I took out as I shuffled around my printouts for a pretty while.
I've got two more, actually.
Okay, you go, and then I'll go.
Well, in terms of best seasons by a Tiger, I was thinking, well, we've said before about how, you know, that Ivy is very much the model for Nank in terms of, you know, short, super competitive, you know, hardworking ruckman. It hadn't occurred to me until I was looking it up that, actually it's a bit of a throwback to that one glorious season when Troy Simmons was quite a good ruckman as well. I looked up the stats and actually Troy Simmons remains the highest disposal winner of any regular ruckman in the past 25 years.
Interesting.
I wasn't expecting that one. But actually, statistically, the best ruckman we've had, you know, for a single season was Brad Ottens.
Okay.
So 2003, Brad Ottens, 15 disposals, 6 marks, and potted, and was a regular goal kicker as well. So. 16 goals. So, I did not expect that.
Yeah. So I mean, so what year was that?
2000. Sorry, back and have a look. 2003. Brad Ottens.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a point there. So what I did was, it's very hard.
Six
in total hit-outs per game in 2003.
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty exciting doing a podcast of people reading out footy-wise stats.
Yes, it is. But, like, I did it on the basis of... Because you can't compare aggregate hit-out numbers because the game's changed.
The game has changed. Greg Deer had, like, barely any hit-outs and was still top 10 in the league. Right.
Mm. And even disposal has changed a bit. But sort of Evie's best years. He had 3 years in a row where he was, three out of 4 years where he was in the top 10 in the AFL for hitouts. The best one being he finished a fourth in total hitouts. He was never great in hitouts per game. He had 2 years. Anyway, so fourth was his best year in hitouts per game. And his disposals were okay. Benny had a superb year in 98, where he was seventh in hitouts per game, which is okay. But he also had 16 disposals a game, which is phenomenal for a ruckman in 1998.
I think maybe that 2001 combination of Benny and Brad Ottens, right? As well as Richo Ford, Ben Holland in the same team, Darren Gasper. Like then, that's by far the best big man division I can remember in a Tiger team since, frankly, since the 1980 era team.
So, just to tell you how much football has changed, in Greg Deer's best year, he finished eighth in total hitouts in the AFL. Guess how many hitouts a game he had? Well, you don't have to. It was 10 hitouts a game. It was enough to get you to eighth total in the AFL. Like, that's, think about it, like 10 hitouts a game is, there are second rucks getting more than that these days.
That's backup stance.
So there's not a definitive, I think Ivy went longer than Benny as a high hitout ruckman. Obviously this is Benny as a ruckman rather than as Benny as a centre half forward. I think you have a point about Otto.
In terms of a peak season, like that combination of disposals, goals and hitouts.
I think that's fair. I think you could also say that as a pure ruckman, Ivy might have had the longest career as at a high level for us.
In terms of most impact on the team's clearance work as well, we got noticeably better and stayed good for a while with him.
But I'll just say to the listeners, if you have not watched the video on the Richmond website, do so.
And then go. A friend of the podcast, Simon Wallace, has tweeted out a couple of YouTube clips of favourite Benny moments, and there's more than a few that made me a bit misty, including the
Ivy moments.
The soccer goal off the ground was a pretty big winner.
Oh yeah, it was. But I just the point Dimmer made was that Ivy's contribution to the club was much more. He was a great player, but Dimmer didn't talk about that at all. He talked about the standards he set and his off-field example and the character he brought to the football club. And that's something that even from a distance you could really see that as a fan. And, he was actually, for thousands of Richmond supporters, just a wonderful person to meet him as well. So, yep.
We love Ivy.
Yep. It's going to be... I've already been seeing him in the AFL, in the VFL. It's like watching a lion who was caught in the wild in the zoo.
I've sort of come around in my middle aged. I've come around to, I really don't mind if, good players finishing their career in the VFL because they're not going out with anything left, They're playing as long as they could.
And in his farewell speech, he spent a long time talking about the ruckman, and he spoke as a coach, not as a fellow player. Which is great. He's making a great transition.
Apparently, he had multiple offers to sort of play part time player, part time coach this year, and that reflects the standing he's held in around the league.
If we're playing a meaningless game, knock on wood that we're already in the finals, we're playing a meaningless game in round 23, I'd love him to play one last game while we rest in there.
I'm on board. Port Adelaide, they're quite a lot like us.
Yep.
Some crucial differences, which we'll get to, but they play really
aside from slightly better, but yeah.
Instead of having midget forwards, they have fantastic mid-size forwards and a behemoth full forward, but They're a very direct football team, and it could be a pretty tough game to watch at times on the weekend, because these are the two best defences in the AFL playing against each other.
Hmm. They are very good, and that's very true. And they're very fast on the break.
Mm, fast and direct. Don't handball much. Long kicking team, as are we. Yeah, it'll be fascinating. Similarity of styles and who sort of gets to play the game the way they want.
Yeah, I've heard that according to some advanced metrics that AFL clubs use, that they're the best team in the AFL. Mm. I mean, they're obviously pretty good using the old-fashioned ladder metric, but the style of play. I suspect those advanced metrics aren't making opponent-adjusted changes, though, which they do in AFL these days, because actually, Port Adelaide have had a cream puff schedule.
Yeah, and they'd lost to Essendon by 70 points 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, that is a tribute to the randomness of AFL. But
yeah, where the hell did that come from?
Port Adelaide's good record is built on things like two games against Brisbane.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm trying to see a win against a top eight team in their schedule. Yeah, still trying. Nope, can't see any.
No. I mean, you know, they played all right against GWS.
Yeah, and look, beating teams by a lot, you know, mid-ranked teams by a lot, is a sign that you're a pretty good team. But, yeah, they're not unbeatable. And that we were five-goal underdogs against GWS, whereas we're only three-goal underdogs or so against Port.
I thought we were 22 points last to check, but you could, you know, different sources.
I saw 19 this morning, but yeah.
I think we should be 18 point underdogs. Mm. Not that matters, but yeah, that's how I feel about the game.
Yeah, I think we've got a chance, but it's not going to be easy.
It's not, but hopefully it'll be a good game, and hopefully it'll be. Okay, yes, not high-scoring teams, but we're less boring to watch than your average low-scoring team in Solaport.
Yeah, that's true. Extremely frustrating at times with our goal-kicking,
less boring. It is exhilarating. When we're on the break, this is not something I've said in any I've said before on this podcast, Nick. It is exhilarating when we are on the break off the halfback line.
I know. Space. Really nice for Tyson Stengel, who's South Australian, but having his debut in front of family and friends.
Oh, nice. Yeah, good one. Yeah. Mm. And Oleg will play...
Mm, that's true. He's playing... Mm. He's the... I think they're the only two South Australians on the list. Mm. I don't know. Shane Edwards. Yeah.
That's true.
Mm. Well, feeling positive now. I'll be nervous and stressed on Saturday night.
At least it's meaningful football.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
See you next time.